stabilize the general as best he could. Then he'd gotten to work on Andy. He sat beside her now, a tube connecting his arm to hers, as his blood flowed through to her, giving her a chance at life. The silent droid held a cloth to Andy's forehead with humanoid hands, doing its best to help. The ship was on autopilot, soaring through hyperspace as it carried them toward the only place Dex knew to go. Back to the place he'd learned his skills, back to Ryseth's headquarters outside Tenebris. The one place where they might be safe, where someone would be able to help Andy. The knife had gone so close to her heart. Dex tried to calm himself, but anger raged through him. He needed information, needed to know why, of all people, Valen Cortas had sided with the Queen of Zentera. They had all been so wrong about him. How had they not seen the signs? How had they not known? "Tell me!" Dex yelled at the general. At first, the dying man didn't answer. Dex knelt down next to him, gently lifting the general's head so he could speak without blood pooling in his mouth. It took him a moment to find his voice.
"I didn't know this was..."
He cleared his throat, a line of blood dripping from his lips.
"Going to happen?"
He paused, once again taking a shaky breath. "Tell me what you do know," Dex growled.
"He is dying," Lon said. "He deserves peace."
"He may be the only man in the galaxy who knows what the hell just happened back there," Dex said, voice rising. He looked back at the general. "Tell us!"
General Cortas's face was already paling, white as the stars that streaked by. He looked down at his bleeding chest, as if he could still see Valen's hand digging in the blade.
"I knew he had evil in him."
He coughed again.
"Because of that demon who was his mother."
"Mirella?" Dex asked.
"Not her."
His teeth were red from blood. He grimaced.
"Oh, God stars, what have I done?"
"Tell me,"
Dex pressed, because he knew that when the general died, the truth would die with him.
"You don't have much time."
General Cortas closed his eyes, and Dex was afraid he was already gone. But then they opened again, blue as a summer sky. The light in them was slowly fading.
"I've held on to this secret for years."
He swallowed, tears slipping from the corners of his eyes.
"So listen closely, not for my sake, but for Mirabelle's. I don't think I have enough strength left to say it twice."
Chapter 94. Claren. Year 26. She was a mother again. Not a mistake this time. Rather a plan that fell perfectly into place. Her second child sat in her arms, staring up at her. A boy this time, with dark hair and hazel eyes. He was gentle, this one, but he was strong. Stronger even than her daughter, Nor, had been. The Queen could feel it when she held the boy, like a spark that jolted from him to her. Sometimes when she asked him not to cry, he carried on. Sometimes when she asked him to sleep, he stayed awake for hours, glaring up at her, screaming until his face was sunset red. When his father held him, he squirmed as if he too hated the man as much as she did. "Someday," the Queen said, as she looked down at her young son, "you will learn who you truly are, and you will understand why I did everything." The baby cried. She did not love him, not in the way she had loved Nor. "Take him," she said to the servant beside her. The many-armed woman took the baby into one set of her arms, rocking him gently. "I am going to see Cyprian." She swept out into the halls, passing by servants who cast their eyes down. They had begun to fear her since Cyprian had given her free rein of the estate, since the place on his arm was no longer taken up by his wife, but instead by the woman he'd ripped away from the battleground on Zentera 2 years ago. She found him in his office, seated behind his desk as he pored over the maps of the galaxy, deciding how best to attack Zenterra and the other small planets in the Olin system in the coming days. "Cyprian," she said as she entered the cavernous room. He stiffened, something he had been doing all too often at the sound of her voice. She gritted her teeth, forced herself to speak with more strength. "Come to me, my love." He stood, his chair scraping back. When he crossed the room, his body was stiff, as if he didn't want to be near her. He kept his eyes downcast until she placed a gentle finger below his chin and angled his gaze to hers. "Kiss me, Cyprian," she whispered. He pressed his lips to hers in a deep kiss that had him groaning, wanting more, always more. She steeled herself as she pulled away and spoke again. If he obeyed, it would change everything. "You will take me home tonight," she said. Cyprian's head jerked upward. "What?" She nodded. Nerves pricked at her senses. If she could do this, if she could get him to take her back with their new son in tow. "I wish to return to Zenterra," the queen pressed. "My husband, he will surrender."
"Your husband," Cyprian hissed. "He does not care for you, fool queen."
He shook his head and ripped himself away from her.
"I cannot allow this. You have seen too much, heard too much."
His shoulders rose and fell as he inhaled and released a breath.
"You are bound to me now, Claren, through our child."
"Which is why I wish to take him too," she said. She swept closer to him. "Cyprian, look at me, my love." He spun around, eyes flashing.
"I will not allow you to bewitch me again."
"Bewitch you?" She put the power into her words, where her compulsion was strongest, put the power into her gaze, too. She could feel it working on him, but only for a moment. Then she hit the wall. Little by little, Cyprian had begun fighting back, building a wall within his mind, as if there was something inside of him, some hidden power that he, too, bore.
"You will send me and Valen to Zenterra," the queen said.
Her body shook with the power she urged into her words.
"Tonight."
Cyprian was motionless as he watched her.
"You will send me and Valen to Zenterra," she tried again, sweat beading on her brow. "Tonight."
"Tonight,"
Cyprian said, and she felt the wall in his mind begin to crumble. Exhaustion had made him weaker. It was why each night she kept him awake with her kisses, her touch, her false love.
"My husband will allow us entry," she said, still using her power on him, compelling him to obey,
"as long as you propose a ceasefire. From both sides, for one day, you will release Valen and me to Zenterra, and you will forget that we existed. You will remove us from your memories and from your heart." Cyprian looked up. This time when he locked eyes with her, she saw that she had finally won.
"Pack your bags, my dear,"
he said.
"Tonight you will board a ship. It is time for you to return home."
"And then?" she pressed.
"And then," Cyprian said, his jaw tight as her power flowed into him, "I will remove you both from my memories and my heart."
"Good," she said. "We leave at nightfall." As the prisoner queen left Cyprian's office, her steps light and bouncing, she could not help but smile at everyone who passed. Every fool, unaware of her plans. Her time on Arcadius had been hell, a necessary one, but a hell all the same. It had taken years for her to truly understand the magnitude of what was at play. Tonight she would return to her Zenterran throne, back to her husband, back to her daughter, to introduce them to her newborn son. He was asleep when she went to him, the many-armed servant standing guard as promised.
"You look pleased, mistress," the servant said, anxiously twisting her many hands together like a tangle of knots. "I am pleased," the prisoner queen smiled, because she knew the truth, perhaps for the first time in a very long while. Freedom was within her grasp, and when her children met, when they combined the strength of the abilities that she'd felt in both of them, she could almost feel the distant conduit tremble, even from here. The galaxy did not stand a chance. Chapter 95. Clarin, Year 30. 4 years had passed since the Queen had commanded her captor to take her home. Cyprian had managed to outwit her that night. Flying high with her triumph, she'd never expected him to turn on her. Somewhere along the way, he had discovered her compulsion ability. Somehow, he'd been the only man to ever discover the difference she held in her blood. And so he kept her locked up for 4 years, refusing to see her when she called upon him, ignoring her pleas to return home to Zenterra, denying her the right to see her son. And yet he always came crawling back, unable to pull her from his mind. She'd embedded a deep obsession within him, and it was her only hope. Just days ago he'd entered her quarters, saying that her husband had agreed to a truce, that she'd finally be able to go home to the family she hadn't seen in 6 years. Now, finally, she was nearly back where it all began. She sat aboard a starship, staring out at the darkness of space. Far in the distance, the glowing orb that was Zenterra hung like a tiny waiting gift. On its surface, her daughter, Nor, waited. Around her the ship buzzed with soldiers rushing about. Polished boots thudded on shining Arcadian mind metal. The captain, with his clawed hands, was busy speaking in hushed tones over the comm system. Each time he spoke, Clarin could hear the clacking of his massive teeth, the low, deep-chested rumble of a growl as he communicated with Zenterra, where she knew she would soon walk. So many years she'd been away. Now it was nothing like the planet she had left behind. On that fateful day she'd last seen it, Zenterra was already dying, but the surface was still a livable place, its citizens able to grow food and harvest water from great wells. Now it was a dead, barren wasteland that hung limp in the cradle of space. "Home," the queen whispered to herself. Heavy footsteps approached behind her now. A hand caressed her bare shoulder. Lips touched the nape of her neck beneath her piled curls. "You lied to me all these years," she whispered. "You said they were holding their ground, still fighting. But that was never true, was it?"
"They weren't lies, my dear Clarin,"
Cyprian hissed in her ear, his warm breath sticking to her skin.
"I just didn't tell you the full truth. You are still my enemy, no matter the things we've been through together these past years."
His fingertips trailed farther down her neck and onto her arms, where they squeezed tightly enough to make her gasp in pain. "When?" she asked. "When will I be on the ground?"
"As soon as you sign the treaty,"
Cyprian said, lowering a holoscreen to her lap, the contract she'd requested ready for her signature. "You'll stay true to your promise?" Clarin asked, as he knelt beside her, steadily avoiding her gaze. "You'll leave Zenterra alone."
"Sign the treaty, and you and your planet will be free."
Cyprian ran his fingertips down her arm, then took her hand in his. Slowly he lifted it to her lips.
"Swear it," the queen said.
Without a moment of hesitation, Cyprian agreed. Her heart pounded against her ribs. Perhaps it was because freedom was in her grasp. Perhaps it was because finally, after so many years trapped in Arcadius, she would be reunited with her husband, her daughter, her precious, precious Nor.
That thought, along with the hope that she hadn't failed her mission just yet, was what made her place the palm of her hand on the scanner, initiating the peace treaty that would end this war once and for all. The hollow beeped as her print was recorded. "Your turn, Cyprian," the queen said, passing the hollow to him. She waited for him to sign the treaty, to seal Zenterra's fate and the conduits far beyond. But instead of placing his hand on the scanner, he stood and walked toward his red uniformed pilot.
"Is the fleet ready for engagement?"
he asked, handing the hollow to a nearby soldier.
"Yes, sir,"
the pilot responded. Cyprian glanced at her without a hint of emotion written on his face, then back to the pilot. Claren went still.
"Cyprian," she said, "where is Valen? You said he would go with me. I will not leave without my son."
She could see his jaw working, see his body go rigid at the sound of her voice. He started to turn toward her, but at the last moment he stopped.
"Cyprian, come here."
She tried again, but her voice had lost its cool calm, replaced instead by a trembling, pathetic note.
"Come, and let me look upon you one last time."
Footsteps sounded behind her. Hands grabbed her shoulders, and Claren cried out as her head was yanked back against the headrest. Then she felt the cold, unfeeling grip of a strap locking around her throat, forcing her to stare ahead, out at the distant planet.
"Release me!" she shouted. "I am the Queen of Zenterra!"
The strap tightened in place, so tight that she could scarcely breathe.
"Cyprian!" she gasped. "Release me!"
All around her, soldiers were moving to action, tapping on dashboard screens, speaking into comms from which distant voices responded. But the queen could only stare ahead, eyes widening as she saw a fleet of ships soar past, massive, hulking black warships, the largest she had ever seen.
"Cyprian!"
she cried again, her voice breathless. His voice came from beside her. She twisted, fighting against the restraint on her throat. Then she froze in horror as he said,
"Ready the weapons."
Ice flooded through her. She knew she'd been fooled, saw her mistake in an instant. He had bested her, discovered a way around her powers, discovered a way to fully overcome her compulsion. The treaty was all a ruse to get her here, to pause the Zenterran soldiers while their queen hovered in the sky overhead, about to be returned home. They wouldn't mount a defense, fearing for her safety. And now they would all die.
"Please," she begged. "Cyprian, stop this at once. I'll do anything you wish. Please, spare them."
His deep rumble of laughter sent a cold spike into her chest. Then his lips were at her ear again. His hands were in her hair, yanking at the strands as he whispered,
"Fool queen, you'll bewitch me no more."
He stood and gave the command to attack. Frozen in place, she watched as the ships opened fire on Zenterra. The retort was enough to shake the ship, to sink into the queen's bones and cause her to cry out as she watched blazing, furious orbs of light soar through the darkness, heading straight toward the planet below. In that moment, the queen knew she had failed. All she could see was her daughter's face. Nor, alive and well, her eyes on the sky as she watched her death barrel toward her from the fringes of space. The queen reached deep into her soul. She found that tiny, shimmering thread within, and with mental fingers gripped it tight.
"I'm sorry," she whispered. She begged the connection to work, begged for her daughter to hear her.
She sent forth an image of two ancient, bloody handprints pressing against a cold glass tower, bodies lying beside her bare feet, the faraway conduits swirling and bright, the journey, the pain, the constant, trustworthy Darai, always willing to tell her the truth, to keep her in line with the light. Before the bombs reached the planet, the Queen sent forth an image of Valen's face as she'd last seen it 4 years ago, tiny and screaming and so much like her own.
"You are not alone. You have a brother," she whispered.
She could almost feel the planet shake as the bombs hit. Like a bolt of lightning, fingers of blue fire stretched across it, weaving their way around every piece of the land. With it, a scream erupted from the Queen's throat. Zentera went dark. She screamed until she heard Cyprian's voice beside her, his lips hot and wet against her skin.
"Scream, Clarin," he said. "Scream and see the proof that you have lost."
She kept screaming, even as his soldiers gripped her head tight and the tip of an electric blade appeared before her. Her voice went ragged as they sliced her tongue from her mouth. She finally fell silent as they unlocked her bindings. As they dragged her limp body into a pod, sealed it shut, and sent Clarin Solis, the failed queen, from afar, barreling endlessly into the cold, black skies.
Chapter 96. Nor. As an 11-year-old child, Princess Nor lay in the rubble of the palace, her father's corpse beside her. Around her, fires burned and people cried out in agony. Her world was gone. Then, just as she had lost all hope, she heard a woman's soft voice in her head, slowly growing stronger. It was familiar, a voice she knew but did not know all the same. It belonged to her mother. 10 words were all she said before the connection was cut. 10 words that gave her not just hope, but a drive to fight back against the oppressors who did this to her planet. "I'm sorry," the voice had said. Then, "You are not alone. You have a brother." The voice disappeared, but Nor knew in her bones that her mother was dead. It was as if a line was cut between them that she never knew existed until this very moment. But the message was enough to fuel her need to escape the rubble and give her a new mission. Find her brother. 13 years later, Nor's men finally kidnapped Valen from Arcardius and successfully delivered him home. When he arrived, he was a selfish Arcardian-raised boy, scared and frail, not the warrior Nor had hoped to find. At first he didn't seem to share the family's gift of compulsion, but Darai told her to be patient. He promised a way to bring it forward, not in the same way Nor had accessed her abilities, but through a harsher, bloodier method. She gave the orders Darai recommended, and threw her only brother into cell 306 on Lunamir. She had him tortured day after day until, driven by pain, his mind latched on to the compulsion ability he never knew he had. Nor could still remember the words she'd said to him after he stopped his torturers. She knelt before him. Their eyes had met, and she felt the power as their telepathic link sidled into place. She'd spoken to him with her mind. "You will join me, brother. And together, you and I will take back the galaxy."
Chapter 97. Valen. Nor was an angel of darkness, sprung from the most illustrious black hole in the universe. And soon, everyone would know her name. She would be worshipped, a goddess who walked among the stars, the ability in her grasp to destroy whole systems with one glance. Valen looked upon his sister, her elegant midnight gown flowing down her subtle curves like a river of darkness. Power, like no other, radiated from her. He would do anything for her. She was his family, his queen, his everything. If she asked him to kill, he would oblige. He would destroy every other being in the universe if it pleased her. She'd sworn that if he killed the general, they would never be apart again.
He would be by her side as they ruled the galaxy together. Brother and sister. Together always. No one could defeat them. He shivered with pleasure as he remembered the way his weapon sank into Androma's chest. The look of pure shock on her face before a curtain of pain replaced it. Pretending to be the Valen that Androma had once known was easy, just as Nor had told him it would be. But he'd shed his past self when Nor found him. The pain Lunamir had inflicted on him opened his mind and led to so many discoveries. He would happily go through it all again if she asked. He had been given a new chance to protect a sister he never knew he had, a chance at redemption after he'd failed to keep Kaylee safe. He would not waste the opportunity this time. The only difficulty had been pretending to forgive the monster who had killed Kaylee. It wasn't an accident. Androma had killed his sister in cold blood, and it delighted Valen that he'd played Andy like a puppet on strings. Valen looked down at his hands, covered in the dried remains of Andy's and Cyprian's blood. It was beautiful. The color a deep, matte red. He brought his hand up to his face, and his tongue tasted the blood of his enemy. The blood of the man who'd kept Valen from his true mother. The monster who'd lied to him his entire life about where he'd really come from and what he could do. The sharp metallic flavor seeped into him. Revenge did taste sweet. It tasted like justice. He returned his gaze to his sister, who stood surrounded by her advisors. His gaze met hers, and she lifted her golden hand, motioning him forward. His feet couldn't move fast enough as he entered her inner circle, standing on the ballroom stage. "Valen, my brother," Nor's heavenly voice said when he approached. "Darai and Zahn just gave me some wonderful news. We have successfully established control over Arcardius, and will soon have dominion over the remaining capital planets." Valen nodded. This had always been the plan. The Adhiran attack had been a bit of a deviation, but crash landing on the planet had allowed for Valen to contact Nor through their bond and given her an excuse to have some fun. To wage war in the bloody ways of old, in a place where he knew she would win. They'd given the people of Adhira something to distract them from passing along the knowledge of Valen's altered DNA. The only other flaw in their plan had been the general's obnoxious AI, who had noticed the change, along with the marauders. The crew, Valen knew, were to be destroyed during the ball. The AI, however, he'd silenced himself, before it could deliver the message to the general's doctors and destroy the mission before it began. It was fortunate that Dex and the marauders hadn't thought to mention it to the general either. There would have been no way to eliminate them before the ball without arousing suspicion. They had likely assumed that Alfie would pass along the news to the medical team looking after Valen, since the AI had been charged with his care. Valen looked to Nor again as she spoke.
"Will the bloody Baroness pose a problem?"
Valen thought of how his knife had met its mark when he sunk it into her chest. "No. She's dead." Nor's rouged lips lifted at the corners.
Chapter 98 Dex.
"So now you know the truth,"
General Cortas said. Dex sat back on his heels, staggered at the revelation. "So Valen is half Zentaran?" he asked.
"Or something else,"
the general said, coughing.
"There was something strange in Claren's blood. Something I'd never seen before."
"That's why you never named him your heir," Dex said, realization dawning on him. "You didn't think he could be trusted."
"And I was right,"
General Cortas agreed.
"But Arcardius, the Phylexo system still needs a leader."
He paused, gasped for air.
Get me a hollow, boy,
the general said faintly. Dex fetched a hollow from the storage room and brought it back to the dying general.
What would you like me to do, sir?
I need to get into my files on the Arcadian database. Do as I say quickly, because I can feel our time coming to an end.
The general guided Dex through the various steps that bypassed the Arcadian servers. A few moments later, General Cortas let out a breath.
Place my right hand on the screen.
Dex did as he said, watching the general scan his clammy ashen palm.
Now have it scan my left eye.
Once again, Dex followed his command, and when it was done, he waited for further instructions.
Now do the same to Androma. Hurry!
Dex wasn't sure he trusted the man, but the general seemed so determined. He followed his orders, scanning Andy's palm and eye as quickly as he could. When he returned to General Cortas's bedside, the man took a moment to speak. Using up his remaining strength, he finally told Dex what he'd done.
The fate of the galaxy is at stake. The leaders are dead, and I'm sure their successors soon will be as well.
He took in a ragged breath.
What I just did goes against every bone in my body, but Androma is the only Arcadian on this ship once I die.
He coughed, and blood wetted his dry lips.
I cannot let my personal feelings about the girl overcome my duty to my planet.
He paused as he tried to regain his breath.
If she survives, she will lead Arcadius upon my death.
Dex was sure he must have misheard.
Sir?
When I die.
General Cortas looked up at Dex with his fading, bloodshot eyes.
Androma Rassella will be my successor. She will be the rightful general of Arcadius.
Before Dex could ask him any more questions, the general let out a bloody, wet cough. Dex had seen people die before, many times, but seeing the light fade from General Cortas's eyes marked the end of an era and the beginning of another, one with a dark, unknown future. All across Arcadius, silver explosions rained down from the skies. At first, the Arcadians were transfixed by the sparkling orbs that came from the clouds, but when they touched the ground, sank into their skin, their minds were altered in a way they could not have foreseen. The enemies of Zenterra turned their eyes to the sky, smiling as they thought of their new queen. An evil, long thought dead, had been reborn. A queen without power had taken up her new throne, a prince of compulsion at her side. And far away, hidden within the swirling colors of a nebula, a general in a glass starship died. The Bloody Baroness took his place.
Hey, it's Lindsay again.
And Sasha. Now that you've listened to Zenith, we want to give you a bit of an insight behind how the book was created.
When Sasha and I first got the idea to write a book together, we knew only two things. One, we wanted it to be about a group of fearless females, and two, we knew it involved pirates, of some kind.
We had a question for you, and we literally sent it out on Twitter. It said, if we were to write a book together, would you rather it be a sci-fi or fantasy? When the results came in and a majority chose fantasy, we of course decided to write science fiction.
It was that little streak of rebelliousness that led us to create Andy and her crew, a group of young women that dared to do things differently. We've both been readers for most of our lives, and one thing that was missing in a lot of the stories we love is strong female friendships.
A lot of the times, these female friendships aren't the main focus of stories. Most of the time, it's about a friendship fading away, or the classic Mean Girls trope. But as we wrote the early drafts of Zenith, we discovered what it truly takes to make a female friendship work.
Andy and the crew come from broken pasts. They're haunted by many ghosts, and oftentimes they learn to lean on each other when strength is hard to come by. Co-writing a novel, especially one on as grand a scale as Zenith, isn't easy.
There are times when things don't line up. We're two different people from two different backgrounds and two very different stages of life. But that has never stopped us from world domination.
Sasha, focus. We discussed this before we got to the studio.
Fine.
We started working on Zenith as friends who just wanted to try something fun. But through the creative process, we've learned the value of communicating like sisters.
We aren't afraid to open up to each other about how we feel. This is reflected in Zenith by the way the girls will call each other out when they're in a tough situation, specifically with Lyra and Andy.
There are some scenes in Zenith, especially the scenes during the crew's time on Adhira, when Andy and the girls are truly opening up to each other for the first time since the beginning of the book. Andy is struggling. The girls give her the honesty that she needs, and in return it helps Andy move forward with her life.
The thing we love so much about Zenith is that we've been able to write our own friendship into this book. We're a crew of two. We've shared tears, laughter, amazing experiences like traveling the world together.
Literally, we shared a room together for a month in Scotland because we were too afraid to stay in separate bedrooms in a big empty house.
Before the editing stages of Zenith, Andy and the girls were just friends who helped each other get by. But it wasn't until the later drafts that they became a family.
Once we truly got to know each other, shared shoes and jeans, and I used Sasha as a buffer for not having to talk to strangers on airplanes, we went back into Zenith and reworked the relationship between Andy and her crew.
They're friends, yes, but they're also family. They're sharing life together, the ups and the downs, and without each other, they wouldn't be able to navigate their way through the trials that come in Zenith.
In the same way, without each other, Zenith would never have grown to become the book that it is today. We're so grateful for the chance to tell this story, not only because we think it's epic, but because we feel like it's a part of our own story, too.
Our lives have been forever changed by Zenith. We can't wait for you to read the rest of the story next year. Now, we've got to get back to writing.
Can we get coffee first?
Yes. Yes, we can.
We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Zenith, The Androma Saga, Book 1, by Sasha Alsberg and Lindsay Cummings. Performed by Jordan Claire McCraw, Stephen Dexter, Caitlin Davies, Nicole Zanzarella, Michael Rahal, and Jane Oppenheimer. This program was produced by Dion Audio. Executive producer Suzanne Mitchell. Text copyright 2016 by Sasha Alsberg and Lindsay Cummings. Production copyright 2018 by Harlequin Enterprises Limited. Used under license with Harlequin Books, S.A. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.